I felt there off, but fuck it. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Jake will fix it.
But fuck it.
We'll do it in post.
Well.
Add the laser sounds here.
Pew pew! Welcome to this cursed week of A Star to Steer Her By.
Like all weeks during Enterprise.
No, this one's worse than usual. It's episode 343. Whoa. My name is Caitlin. I know. Who can believe it? I'm Caitlin, and with me today are... Jake.
Oh, me?
Always. Jake. Always Jake.
I didn't remember the order of the shit. Me, Jake.
Chris.
And Ames.
Good job, guys. That's very well done.
Caitlin is so unwell, and she's still here to talk about this garbage with us.
Yeah, I think this actually made me less well. Like, I was feeling a little better, and then I watched the second episode on my way up here, and I now just kind of want to die. But I don't want it to be the last thing I see, so I'll keep going for now. This week, we are here to discuss two episodes of Star Trek War Crimes. I'm sorry, Enterprise. Anomaly and Extinction. In Anomaly, what a fucking boring piece of shit. I'm sorry.
I feel like don't worry.
Basically, what it comes down to is we're in the expanse. It's fucking shit up. Some interesting visual effects at the beginning of the episode. Knocking over crewmen, which I thought was great. I found that to be the most enjoyable part of the episode.
Oh, and what's the freaking dog's name? Porthos. Porthos had a line.
Oh, that's right. Porthos was in here. So, I mean, basically, we don't have any, we have no Trillium D to protect us from the Expanse, so the Expanse is just wreaking havoc on all our shit. We get boarded by pirates, whoopsie. They steal our shit, someone finally dies.
Yay! I was so happy!
We somehow captured an Osarian pirate, I guess his name is Orgoth, and Archer does some torture.
Oh, and he loves it.
Yeah, it was great. He had a huge patriotic boner. We use this torture to get important information about accessing the systems of the Osarian ships. Mayweather gets to have a few lines as he has to fly the ship within 1 kilometer of the Osarian ship so that we can download their databanks, everything we can find about the Zindi. And it works. We get 90% of their Zindi database, and then we send Orgoth home to his friends. And he's like, I told you your morality would get in the way.
You should have killed me when you had the chance. Don't worry, you'll never see these people again.
I think that's the end.
Yeah.
Basically, sure it's basically just like, full disclosure, I watched this last night while I was still in the throes of like barely being able to stay awake. So I kind of fell asleep, not nearly as far into the episode as I thought.
How does that change it from normal episodes?
I usually stay awake for episodes, just not immediately following a tasty meal. It's the meal that does it. But yeah, so I fell asleep and I think I dreamed some of this episode or something. Because
your version was probably better.
Yeah, no. I want to see that version.
And then I woke up and realized I'd fallen asleep, and I was like, fuck, I have to go back and watch. Well, at least I was like, I don't know, halfway through? No. I was like 15 minutes in when I passed out, so I had to rewatch it. And I was just like, is this... what is this? And then I get to the part where Archer is doing a torture, and I was like, how do people give Ben Sisko so much fucking shit? And we never talk about the sins of Archer, because this is already way worse, in my opinion.
And they're acting like torture is actually at all factual. Like, the information you get from victims is at all credible.
Well, in this case, it was so obvious. If Star Trek says it must be true.
That's what I mean. This is why I hate this episode, and I feel like this isn't the last time this happens, but Star Trek's just okay with torture now.
Yep.
Cool.
Like, because Reed...
don't worry, they're about to be okay with even worse things in the next episode, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Like, Reed looks at him sideways, but doesn't, like, try to stop him.
How could he? He's the captain.
He could have shot him.
Yeah, that's something.
Mutiny.
He at least could have been like, sir, we have rules against this?
Sir, are you aware that...
like, even if Archer kept going, at least have Reed go more than just make a face, you know? Like, have him dressed down by T'Pol afterwards.
Wonder where he's going with that prisoner. Well, not my business.
Like, I think, because I was thinking about this, the difference between Archer and Ben is, like, two things. One, Ben, like, we don't see it a lot, but we know that he is somewhat conflicted, at the very least based on In the Pale Moonlight.
Yeah, Ben knew he was doing wrong things.
But he can live with it.
But also the difference here is, like, Ben is in the weird situation. I mean, not the whole thing with the Romulan, that's a whole different kettle of fish. But when you're going up against the Dominion, you're out of options. Like, we know talking won't work for these people. They are just fascists. And there is no negotiating with fascists.
The Maquis, on the other hand, fuck those people.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, again, one of Ben's flaws. But again, we know this about him. And the show, I think, deals with the fact that he is sort of a morally difficult character. Enterprise seems okay with everything John is doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
John is
that.
John is going up against an enemy that he knows has been manipulated. Like, you know, Future Daddy, or whatever we called him, is like, yeah, these guys were told things by other people in the fucking temporal Cold War.
Future Daddy should just be Admiral Vance.
Yeah. So,
Dadmiral.
So he knows, like, these people are, like, being manipulated. Like, I know I have been manipulated by future assholes. But he never thinks of that. He's just storming in enraged. Instead of being like, I gotta find these people so we can try to deal with the fact that we're all getting fucked with.
Oh yeah, they could do a diplomacy about it, but no. The only thing he can think of is to destroy them now instead of later.
Well, yeah, and again,
the issue too is the people that he's torturing in this episode aren't even...
They're just pirates.
They're just the pirates. Like, sure.
They're stranded like he is.
Yeah, fuck those guys, but also... There's no justification for the torture at all.
No.
Ever. But.
Uh-oh.
If he's going to torture anybody, at least torture the people that he wants, you know, that he's going after, not these guys who, yeah.
Dude, if he could find any of those people, I'm sure he'd be happy to torture them. So far, that seems to be quite difficult.
Well, yeah, I think, Chris, I think you nailed it in that. The issue here is not necessarily that the torture happens. It's that it happens and it's not addressed as a bad thing.
The show approves.
Well, yeah, it's the sign of the time. It's that the U.S. was engaging in so much torture that we weren't allowed to question because, you know, 9/11 had happened and therefore everything is okay now.
Well, no, that's the thing. We were allowed and we did. Like, a lot of people were very against... Like,
people in any sense of power?
That's right, yeah. Our government was okay with it.
But, exactly. So, but it is not Star Trek's job to toe the party line, right? Mm. If anything...
They should be questioning more.
Yeah. Well, like, that's what we turn to sci-fi for. To, you know, question and to challenge.
Paint half of a guy's face white and half of a guy's face black.
Exactly. Or to have, you know, some aliens trick a black woman and a white man into kissing or, you know, something like that.
The way you put it that way.
Yeah, it's like, that's the problem. This is Star Trek does 9/11, but rather than Star Trek questioning what we were doing, which was basically 100% wrong 100% of the time in that era, they were just like, yeah, this is great. Like, again, having Archer be shitty here would have worked if the show was like, John, you're being shitty. But it's not.
If he had faced consequences for his action, if he had to deal with the blood on his hands after doing it in some way, then maybe. But again, it's just nope. You got to do what you got to do to find the bad guys.
I'd be interested to see the information they get from Orgoth not be correct.
Yeah,
because torture doesn't work. Like, I'm reminded there's a lot of great Always Sunny episodes that deal with fucking insanity. But there's one where they're waterboarding Dee for fun. And Frank announces, I can get her to admit to anything. This stuff really works. And it's like, you've nailed it. You nailed it, Frank.
You don't even have to go to look at, Always Sunny for an example of this. You just have to go and watch another great show. I can't remember what it was called, but there's a scene where there's a character that's being tortured and he says to the torturer, he says, you know, this, you must be getting a lot of pleasure out of this, you know, getting revenge for all the times in your life where you were fucked with. And he goes, no, I'm just torturing you to get information. He goes, well, as you know, torture has never been a reliable means of getting information. You know what?
I know this episode.
Star Trek, The Next Generation, Chain of Command,
Part 2,
Captain Picard.
It is kind of insane, though, that Always Sunny did it better than Enterprise.
Well, Always Sunny,
never mind Star Trek itself.
Like, that's the whole point. Like, it shows you these things, in ways that are like, this is fucked up, but we're terrible people, so we're gonna do them. So show you that it's fucked up, and if you're at all like forward thinking, you'll see that it's fucked up. But you know, there's lots of people who don't.
Yeah,
yeah, and honestly, they probably could have fixed the whole thing if they made it so that the information that he got was bad.
Yeah, and
shown that, like, oh, it wasn't even worth it. You sold your soul and you got garbage.
That would have been interesting,
But this was the early 2000s where comfortable 90s liberalism completely buckled to just the forces of conservatism. It was fucking pathetic.
Why isn't Star Trek able to say that? Is it because
Rick Berman's a fucking coward?
Should they have waited longer or not done this season at all?
This season... Honestly, they shouldn't have done this season with the showrunners they had, because clearly they were not up to it. They were fucking cowards. Like, I won't just blame Berman. I'll blame fucking everyone involved. All the writers, all the people. One called anyone on this. It really reminded me how much this era sucked to live through.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly, I think that they should have, like, they could have done this season with the same plot line and, you know, or the overall plot line and the challenge, but if they had done it as a mirror up to nature to say, this is how you deal with this threat, this existential threat, while not sacrificing your morals and your identity.
Yeah, like this episode,
the way that the US did.
I kept thinking about that episode of Voyager, is that the one where they were in the weird place and made their little mini federation?
Yeah, that's the Void. A good episode.
Yeah, which again, similar thing. It's like she meets a person who's like, we tried to be good, but then we weren't. And she manages to still be her.
Yeah.
John gives in precisely 13 seconds.
Yeah, or another Voyager episode, the fucking Captain Ransom. Can't remember the episode name, but...
Equinox,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that whole episode was like, look, here's a Starfleet captain that's gone bad, and he's doing bad shit, and we should...
Janeway does go a little bad.
Yeah, Janeway goes a little bad.
She does like a torture, too, but we tell her it's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And in the end, in Equinox, the fucking aliens kill the fuck out of Ransom and company.
Yeah.
So, they got their just desserts. Whereas in this one, it just seems like everything. Oh, look, we've gotten closer to finding the Zindi. Great. Yay for torture.
Yeah, we got this database now that we can use for things. We have more of their language. And we found a spear that was cool.
That was cool, yeah.
Yeah, well, the spear is interesting.
What was funny about that, too, is getting... like, also, I love these pirates are just pirates, but also they happen to steal databases just because...
Hey, knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Sell information.
Yeah, but I really think it just happened so that they would have a reason to, you know, do the world's most annoying video game mission, which is staying within range of someone for a certain amount of time. I hate those missions.
Oh, what the hell do they call that in GoldenEye? Like an escort mission?
Not quite, but like those two, yeah. But there's just so many games now where it's just like...
you have to follow the Korok into the woods in one of the Zelda games.
And oh, God,
all
yeah.
of the Zelda games.
There's so many Zelda games in general. It's just like, stand by the computer while things download and waves of enemies come at you, but you have to stay within a specific space or it restarts. And it's like, oh, my God, those suck. But yeah, like you said, too, the whole thing of like, again, we know torture usually gets bad information. And also, again, like, this is the same fucking bullshit that we made fun of in season one or two or whatever, where, like, that fucking when other Quantum Leap guy was like, ah, you've met the Suliban, so surely you know things about them. And it's like, where's the logic there?
Yeah, like, we raided one of their ships. That's all we know.
Yeah, like,
they had tasty
what?
Snacks. We ate them.
Why? Why would you assume they fucking know anything, John, you ignorant fuck?
Well, he's not too bright.
That is true. He is the worst
captain.
He's
so angry. He's so quick to anger.
But, like, when did he get so angry? I feel like
always.
He used to be this angry. Well, no, I feel like...
Then, it was that E.G. Robinson, that dick.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was Florida happened and just amped up his already huge rage.
Oh, but in this episode, we finally have a crew death. Over three seasons into the show, we have a crew member death that... doesn't seem to actually affect him. He just kind of acknowledges it and goes on.
He's even angrier now.
And meanwhile, Reed's like, He was a damn good whatever he did in my department. Gonna be hard to replace him. That's it.
Oh, such a bad episode.
And it's only gonna get worse. You know? I mean,
I'm sure this isn't the end of the, like, patriotic rah-rahism either.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you have seen this show before.
Yeah, but I honestly, like,
I'm sure this isn't the end.
I have forgotten this season as much as I can because of how bad it is.
Oh, man. Chris is repressed, this Star Trek.
I know. Whenever I re-listen to an older episode and you're like, oh, yeah, Star Trek Enterprise, you know, I've got a soft spot for it. Where is it, Chris?
Yeah, as I have said, watching it on the heels of better Star Trek makes me realize how fucking terrible it is. I still love the ship. I still like the uniforms. The props are trash. Trip is great. He deserves to be in a better show.
Yeah, I do feel for Trip because I think he's legitimately good. He's bringing the goods. Was this the episode? Yeah. I like that Trip is literally sleeping 1 hour a night and yet cannot find any hours to go and awkwardly visit to Paul for a weird sensual massage.
Well, because it's awkward. Yeah. It's really deeply uncomfortable. Literally.
Because she has to undress for some reason. You're like, but I'm the one getting the massage. Okay.
This time she didn't. This time she was just like, take off your shirt and take off your pants and jacket.
And your shoes.
Oh, yeah, right.
Something for the foot people.
The next episode.
Yeah, that's the next
episode. Oh, it was?
Yes, shoes, yes, shirt, no service, says to Paul.
Yeah, this is like, it's like, great, we get less decon chamber this season, but we have this bullshit.
Yeah, they did just...
On the other hand, though, I mean, Trip looks good with his shirt off.
Anyway, back to this episode.
Yes.
Wait, is that not this episode, or is that next episode?
This is the one where Phlox says, "You know what you should do is shove these leeches up your urethra," and Trip's like, "Not that, not that."
You know what? That doesn't sound like fun. But I thought that was this episode.
That's this episode. We don't see T'Pol massaging him in this episode.
Wait, really? Oh, right. Because then she gets called in, and then she goes down. Okay.
I'd like to say, of course, it's not this episode, because that wouldn't go tonally with the A-plot, but this is Star Trek.
Oh, but we do get some random Makos undressing, and we see one of their women in the tiny crop top with no bra on.
What I did sort of enjoy...
must have missed that.
...was that the Mako underwear is like glittery silver, like the away
weird.
Team coats from fucking the cage. It's like, who decided
this? Or like very TOS fabric there.
Leftover from TOS surgical gowns or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Or,
it's like
stress. What the fuck? Shock blankets, actually.
Yeah, it's like, what is with this TOS ass material? I am very confused.
Maybe it's an attempt to kind of like retcon that material as being some kind of... engineered textile that's really good at dissipating body sweat, or who knows, right?
Mm. Yeah. I'm struggling a little
with the Makos so far because, A, I don't know any of their names. Every time I write down their names, I'm like, sure, if you say so, I believe you. But also because I can't tell what any of their jobs are. They just seem to be there to be the equivalent of Reed's usual team.
Well, they're basically just Marines in the most traditional sense of the word, where like the origins of the U.S. Marines, I don't know about other countries, is like they were basically, you had Marines on your ships and you got to land. They would be the land force. Mm-hmm. Like they'd go on and do the warren. And then when they were on the ship, like transport, and they also occasionally, to your point, acted as security. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it seems like since there's already a dedicated security team, they're strictly there to be like ground troops.
Extra security. Super security.
I mean, they're literally meant to do what Reed was bitching about a week or two ago, where it was just like, yeah, no, Reed, the idea is these people are more trained at ground stuff than your guys are. They are the experts you want in this situation.
They got the tools. They got the talent.
Yes, exactly.
And as we see next episode, they have a different EV suit, but that's next episode.
Oh, that is
next episode. Remind me to bring it up.
I was going
to
bring that up, but you're right. That's next episode.
Yeah, this one, they're just kind of like on the ship when the pirates are attacking. Yeah. And they all get their asses handed to them, too. And I think Trip is the only one that does any good when he, like, jumps around in engineering and pounces on one of them. I'm like, ooh, get him,
Trip. Doesn't he also shock them with his warp core, or am I making that up?
Oh, it's a blur now, so I don't remember that. But I do remember him pouncing.
Yeah. Meow.
And, of course, we mentioned it, but we have our first official crew death.
See you in hell, Lieutenant...
Fuller.
Fuller.
Yeah.
Right? Right, Fuller?
Fuller.
Yeah, it's right there in the notes.
Yeah, and it, you know, that seemed to be sort of the instigating event that set Archer off on his warpath of murder and destruction.
He looks like normal Archer to me, so.
It didn't take much.
No. No, but there was a scene of him, you know, after the attack in sick bay, and he sees Fuller with the sheet over him, and they show him, and he looks very fucking pissed off.
Yeah, yeah, like, even for him.
They took one of my ice cream cones. Grr.
What are you, Biden?
Yes. Ever since that clip, every day I'm like, oh man, why does Biden get ice cream and I don't?
That's a pretty nice ice cream.
No one's stopping you.
Presidential ice cream.
Presidential ice cream.
See, I only want ice cream now if Seth Meyers can stand awkwardly next to me.
I loved his episode the following day.
His closer look on that was amazing.
Complains about how dumb it looked with him in the background.
Yeah.
Anywho,
here's a note.
Yeah.
Originally, all the Osarian pirates were going to be Orion pirates, and this would be the origin of where Orion pirates came from. They all went mad in the Delphic Expanse.
But they ran out of green grease paint for the...
I am really glad they didn't do that, because that's stupid.
Is it stupid? Is it more stupid or less stupid than these guys whom we'll never see again?
Yes. More stupid. Because, like, this is just one crew of people. To say that a whole race went pirate because of this is fucking idiotic. I also love that, too. It's like, oh, well, these guys don't have a history of piracy. What? Like, any culture has criminals without the whole culture being... what? Fucking what? Okay, who the fuck wrote this?
Chris, you wouldn't steal a starship.
I might.
Like Spock.
Kirk did.
It
worked out for him.
Because I have a history of piracy. Like, what are
but yeah, it's just
about?
Like, it's like, oh wow, these people don't normally have pirates. It's like, okay, so yeah, they can't? Like, most, what the fuck?
But most theft is like a crime of opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, and they have opportunity. It's like the only thing they have.
But this is space. There's all kinds of pirates.
Right.
It's like the sea and back in the day. And still now, but less so.
It's like the sea.
Yeah, and that just brings
full of
back
plastic.
Up the void all over again, because all the people in the void had to resort to piracy because there were no resources.
Yeah.
Like, what we know so far about this Delphic Expanse, I'm still a little confused by it, but hopefully we'll see more of it. Question marks, not sure. But, you know, we see, like, the gravity's weird, and your coffee spills, and Porthos barks at it, and shit like that happens. But it seems like there's tons and tons of people in here that seem... that
yeah,
they're still
like,
living
well, they've,
and going
on? Well,
they've
been dealing with... They use the Trillium D to protect themselves.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Which the impression I'm under is this is now just de rigueur for starships in the future.
Yeah. Well, it also just...
That does,
it also
will come
seems,
up again shortly.
It does also... Like, the sphere seems significant, because that's...
Yeah.
That's, like, a weird fucking thing.
It's quite old, too.
Yeah, like that, I think, is the most interesting thing to come out of this episode is, okay, we found this weird fucking thing that it's clearly man-made.
Mm.
It's doing weird shit. It's got some kind of weird invisibility field around it.
Oh, yeah, that thing was kind of cool.
Yeah, like, it's really interesting. It's a shame it wasn't the focus of the fucking episode.
Mm.
Yeah, it was just apparently, like, someone found it and used it as a storage shed.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like,
one thing I will say, you know how back last season, first, whenever it happened a while ago, I was giving Prada shit for doing bad dog acting?
Mm, yes. Mm-hmm.
Breezy is definitely better at doing the whole reacting to a threat than Prada did.
Mm.
Team Breezy.
Oh, yeah. Another thing, though. Fucking John. He just left the cup there for, like, ages.
It's gonna spill.
What? Which cup?
The one that, like, did...
No, don't worry about that. Don't worry about it. Janeway flew in from the future and just sucked that shit up with a straw.
An
and
admiral
back,
from the future.
And back to the future.
Like, he did eventually yank the cup out of the air annoyedly, but it's like, John, why didn't you do that an hour and a half ago, you weird fucker?
Where's your bounty? Don't you have any quicker picker-upper to take care of this mess?
Puzzle wit.
Actually, now that I think of it, it really should have been... They should have gone through with that twist that the Shadow Daddy was a future Archer after he had been promoted to Admiral, because that would make Chakotay's line prescient,
because... Oh, God.
Because then, like, Archer in like their final showdown where like old evil Archer is trying to convince young virile Archer that I don't know why I said that.
Let's not get carried away.
I do not need to think of that word.
Young Archer.
Younger.
And then Archer can be like, a wise man will one day say, perhaps someday in the future there will be a saying such as, no one can tell you what will happen tomorrow. Not even an admiral from somewhere. The future.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, I hate this show. Ooh. Your version is so much better.
Did everybody hear that? He said he hates this show. I
we have it on record.
Yep.
Well, he might live to regret that. I don't know why I would think
I doubt it.
Oh, yeah, I'm still looking forward to the Mirror Universe episode, though.
Great. It's like the third to last episode in the whole thing. So it's going to be a long time getting from here to there.
Yeah.
I feel like that version of Archer is going to have better ethics than this one. Like, I loved it. The final line that Orgoth throws in Archer's face. I wrote it down. Here it is. Mercy is not a quality that will serve you well in the Expanse. And I'm like, this is Archer, stupid. He's already there. He's already torturing and screaming at people.
Yeah. Remember when you were in the airlock, bro?
Yeah, not listening to a fucking word T'Pol ever says.
Yeah, man, fuck this episode.
Well, speaking of people who are fortunate because they are dead and don't have to watch this shit, let's move on to the episode Extinction.
I preferred this one, so...
Well...
It's the better episode, but it's still bad.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, at least... Like, again, I am an unreliable narrator because my experience of Anomaly was in, like, several parts during which there was 12 hours of sleep.
Before you go on, one more note about Anomaly.
Oh, no!
I'm so sorry. This is the only episode of a television episode of Star Trek that has the same title as another episode of Star Trek, because there will be a Discovery episode called Anomaly.
Huh.
Hmm.
Idiots.
I mean, it finally happened.
It's not even a good title.
Well, but it's probably a better title than this piece of shit deserved, you know? I don't know.
I don't know what Carrying that means. On?
Carrying on. Extinction. Oh, boy.
Oh, you're doing a quantum leap now. But why?
Because Caitlin said, oh boy.
Is that a quantum? I've never seen quantum leap, so.
That's what Scott Bakula says.
Always, yeah.
When he sees the situation that he's in.
Not a good tagline.
He just says, oh boy, and then they cut to the credits.
Well, no, like, because he'll have leaped, like, every episode opens, the teaser of every episode is he leaps into some awkward situation.
And says, oh boy?
No, and then he realizes the situation he's in, and he goes, oh boy. And then it cuts to the intro music.
Thanks, I hate it.
I thought you were doing it because Scott Bakula sort of kind of becomes a different person this week.
Yeah, there's also that. So there's multiple crossovers.
So many layers, like an ogre or an onion.
Or a parfait.
Mm.
It's like poetry that rhymes.
Yes.
God. God, terrible. In this episode, Extinction, I kind of don't remember exactly. Like, we're on this planet because, like, the Zindi... Okay, right. So we downloaded the database, and apparently Archer is the man for the job of, like, going through this thing and mapping out coordinates and figuring out how they charted their stars and shit and whatever. And he's like, I put it all together and it looks like the last planet they were at was this one. And I don't know what that one is because...
It doesn't have a name.
It has no name! And they go and they're like, well, there doesn't seem to be anybody there now, but let's go check it out. Let's send all the important people like Archer and Reed and... Hoshi and T'Pol. Well, I guess it makes sense, Hoshi, in case they run into like glyphs or some shit. I don't know. But they could have just as easily sent the guy that replaced her in her dream that time. He probably would have been fine.
What are they doing? Nothing.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about them. Like
every episode, I forget about them, and then they pop up like, oh, right, Makos.
Yeah. So anyway, they go down to the planet, and right away, like, Lieutenant Reed is like, oh, it's very tropical. I'm British. And then he... turns into a fucking monster. And then soon after him, yeah, like really fast. And then like a minute later, Archer goes, and I guess Hoshi goes. I don't really remember seeing it happen to Hoshi, but it did, right?
Yeah, they didn't have to do like the actively evolving makeup on Hoshi. She just had it.
Just one day it was there. T'Pol, though, has discovered a new magic that the Vulcans have, which is she apparently has K-cells that are able to neutralize whatever is doing this. And what is doing this, you might ask? Well, it is a manufactured virus by the Lokek.
Yes.
Lokek.
The Lokek, who were a species that lost the ability to reproduce, so they created a super virus to transform anyone who comes in contact with it into a Lokek.
Like the Rave Apes from Identity Crisis.
I was thinking that.
And apparently the other thing that this virus does is after it turns you into... What were those things in... what were the guys that we ran into a lot in Voyager called?
The
Bedeans?
No.
The Kazon?
Yeah, I feel like they kind of got a Kazon slash Neanderthal look.
They're definitely Neanderthal look.
Yeah, big weird time Neanderthal. Bastards. So
they kind of have like a simian way of moving too, which
added
to that.
And lots eating of weird... goo up from trees.
Oh, it wasn't goo. That was definitely some kind of larva, some kind of egg pod thing, I think. Yum. Yeah, gross.
Gah. For parfait.
Yeah, same. But anyway, so, you know, they manufactured this thing and it not only makes you turn into a Neanderthal, it makes you want to go to Urquhart, I think is what the place. I can't see the screen, but I believe it was Urquhart.
You are right.
Yeah, they said it like 400 times. And that is like the ancestral homeworld of these aliens that were going extinct, or the species that was going extinct. So the Enterprise is made aware that something is wrong because they're no longer like reading humanoids. They're reading, or at least not humans, they're reading T'Pol as a Vulcan and then a bunch of non-human other things. So Trip is like, let's go down there. And
wear T'Pol EV suits.
T'Pol had sent a message being like, something is changing them or affecting them or adapting them. I don't remember the word she used. What did they say?
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
I don't either. Anyway, the doctor's like, but she said something was changing them. And he was like, yeah, we'll put on suits. It's fine. And it is, luckily for them. So they go down there and they find them and they manage to capture Reed and they throw him in like a, you know, whatever.
Quarantine.
Help. Quarantine. They quarantine him. Yeah, thank you. But then we get visitors, and I don't know what kind of visitors, apparently the leader, their name is...
Nana visitors.
God damn it.
The Nana visitors. But apparently the leader's name is Tret. And he's like, hey, so we noticed that you've got somebody on board that has this sickness, so we're going to kill them. And they were like, whoa, holy shit, that seems a little bit harsh. And he was like, yeah, we had to kill like millions of our people because of this disease, so we take it pretty seriously. And they're like, but we have a friend on planet who like doesn't seem to be affected by it, so we're pretty sure that Phlox in 2 minutes can probably whip up a cure that your people haven't been able to come up with in 60 years.
Where's my that was easy button?
Seriously, where is it?
That was easy.
Barely an inconvenience. So the rest of the episode is like, mostly it's just T'Pol being like, okay, we'll go to Urquhart. Okay, we're here and everyone is dead. You should come back to Enterprise. And they're like, no, we belong here now. And she's like, no, but you'll be safe on Enterprise. And they don't really believe her until Tret's buddies show up and try to fuck things up for them. After they... literally just with their bare hands, like, beat these people into submission somehow. Right. T'Pol's like, maybe now we go to Enterprise? And Archer's like, okay. I don't know. That's something like, yeah, exactly.
basically. Tim Allen's.
He is a fucking kid, man.
Horrible. Nice. And they bring him back to the ship and Phlox just fucking whips it out in like 2 seconds.
Oh, gross, Phlox, put it away.
Yeah, well, he needed it. He needed the special ingredient, which is his toenails. Peaches. or his dick
now,
or something.
Now
I don't
they're
know.
All part peach.
Oh, that's
because
nice.
They got to pull DNA off of peach.
They're all fuzzy and sweet.
Aww.
Yeah. So like tribbles. But yeah, they make the antidote. They give some to Tret's people, and at the end,
oh my god, the end.
Phlox is like, what? "Hey, so what do you say we throw away this virus sample?" And Archer is like, "No, because then the species that created it will cease to exist." That's what he says. But I think he's thinking perhaps future war crimes could be done with this virus.
I was thinking the same.
And if that isn't what he's thinking, then he is just as stupid as he looks.
That is not what he's thinking. He is as stupid as he looks.
Wow. Well, that's, I guess that's good.
It's strange, though, because every other episode, he advocates genocide at like his first opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I actually thought this episode was pretty okay, but I have notes.
Good.
So, all right.
FYI, directed by LeVar Burton. So what notes are you giving to LeVar, Jake?
Well, I'm giving notes not to LeVar, but to the writers.
Okay.
Appropriate that he directed this one.
Oh, the writer was...
Metamorphosis.
The writer was, I forget the name. The name is gone, but it's their usual science consultant.
Yeah.
So you'd think he'd know better.
Well, so I didn't mind it. I thought the setup was interesting, but here's my thought. A couple things I would have changed, I think would have made it a lot better.
Good.
If the aliens that the guys that came to hunt them to like to the guys that maintain the quarantine or whatever, the assholes.
In their superhero costumes.
Yeah.
Okay. Are they assholes or are they heroes? Like, honestly, though.
Oh yeah. I guess. I mean, they're both. They just didn't have the technology or the.
They didn't have a Vulcan.
They didn't have a Vulcan, so they were doing the best they could. But yeah, so those guys. If they didn't, like, they knew the origin of the virus. They knew the whole backstory.
Yeah.
And you have this scene of exposition where the leader explains it to Phlox and to Trip. But if they had instead just been like, we don't know what causes this. Like, we have no idea. It's something about this planet. And everyone that goes to this planet gets it. And it's highly communicable. So we have to eradicate it. And then on the planet side, you had that scene with Archer dreaming about the city.
Yeah.
Mm.
And
the video game city that he saw.
Yeah. So if they had drawn that out a little bit more, like, and eventually, and saved the reveal that it's a dead civilization until the very end, or until, not the very end, but until, like, they get to that city and it's like, oh shit, it's completely destroyed.
Would we still learn that this was a virus created so they could use it to reproduce? Or does that even matter to you?
I it doesn't matter to me. I could see that being like something that Phlox figures out, like oh, it was a doom civilization. We analyze the corpses from the city and they have the same genetic profile, whatever. Yeah, because then it's a little more, it's like, I feel like they gave up too much too early about the civilization for it to stay interesting. And then you could also, another change I would make is when Archer is given the opportunity to destroy the virus and chooses not to, if there had been a follow-up scene.
Where Phlox does it anyway?
No. Of Archer doing something to indicate that he's like retained the memories of that he had when he was the alien.
So it's like, it's the inner light, but terrible?
Like, yeah, give
the
it
dark
give
light,
it like,
the inner
give
dark.
It, give it an inner light twist so that it's like, oh,
like
shit.
He does, like, one of the movements that he did when he was one of the people or
yeah,
one of the
something. Yeah, or have had them do something. Like, maybe there's some kind of thing that they do together. I don't know, whatever.
Play a tiny flute.
This episode did need a tiny flute scene at the end to show that this had an effect on the characters.
Yeah, because then that would also explain why Archer was resistant to destroy it, because
that's a good point.
Because he's like mentally still affected by having been.
Yeah, because I look at it and say, okay, what you have in your hands is not the collective of a whole society. What you have in your hands is a disease that will wipe out people.
Yeah.
You know, to your point, Chris and Caitlin, that it could be used for bio warfare. I don't think that's what they meant to bring up in that scene. I don't think it's foreshadowing. I think it's them wanting Archer to have a moment.
I don't think it is either. But the problem is, it's on the heels of Anomaly, where he was committing so much torture. So my thought right away is...
It was just one torture. I mean,
Archer is just always thinking, how can I more effectively murder everyone in space and not feel bad about it?
This virus...
Onto the Zindi homeworld.
We saw that was set.
Destroyed.
Well, they're wherever they live now. Their new place.
Zindi home B.
Yes.
Zind B. This was originally the planet we would winter on, but now it's just where we live.
We're snowbirds.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually didn't hate this episode overall. You know, I know it's...
Yeah,
it's,
it does have flaws.
It's consistently rated pretty lowly, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, it's because it suffers once again from just being a retread of so many other episodes we've already seen.
Yeah, like I kept thinking Identity Crisis did this and did this better.
Yeah, Identity Crisis was kind of similar. I was also thinking of Dramatis Personae a little bit.
To a certain extent, not at all the same, but I just kept thinking of Genesis.
Genesis, yeah.
Yeah, there's some of that.
Which is at least
a little bit.
Metamorphosis, isn't that one?
No, isn't that Zephyr Cochran gets sucked off by a cloud?
Yeah, fucking a cloud.
Oh, what's the one where Geordi...
Identity Crisis.
The Rave Ape? Yeah,
That's what? Identity Crisis?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, I agree with that then, because I've been thinking this whole time that it was called Metamorphosis.
Favorite Son, where Harry Kim starts turning into, I think it's a Parisian, and, you know, having these, I have to get to my home world feelings.
Yeah, like a salmon.
Yeah, so it's not the most original.
No, it feels like, again, how like last episode it was like, hey, this sphere thing's pretty cool. Too bad it's an afterthought. With this, it's like the idea of a species trying to save itself with a virus is really interesting. Too bad it just kind of is there to push the plot along. It isn't really the plot.
Yeah, and too bad we have kind of seen it before, because, you know, we can say like, oh, yeah, species who don't know how to reproduce. Procreate. The two of them together. Because we saw the same thing in, like, Ashes to Ashes, where some species took corpses and reanimated them as themselves. Like, we've seen the weird reproduction thing where they just take over other people's bodies ad nauseum.
Yeah. But even, like, it's just, like, because this was... Again, what's interesting, though, with this one is, like, it's... Because with, like, the Rave Apes, I think that was just how their species reproduced.
The Rave Apes.
And they weren't a technologically advanced species.
They were a technologically advanced.
Yeah.
Because they're rave apes.
It's like, this was clearly a species intelligent enough to create this disease and knew what they were doing.
But not cure themselves of extinction.
Yeah, so it's just like, I like, in a way, if they had kind of interlighted it a little more, and John, like, maybe in his dreams was kind of seeing it happen, and...
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, one stupid dream thing, I was like, ugh, stupid dream thing. But if they, that's an interesting point. Like, if he were actually, like, or if it got to the city and he was like, I remember this thing. And then we see, like, a flash or something of a previous Lokek or what have you.
Yeah, but also just the fact that they, like, the transformed people seem, like you said, like, kind of, like, caveman-y. But they were advanced enough to create this virus. It's like, what, are they cavemen or are they scientists?
Yes.
Like, or would it have been interesting to see maybe, like... That's what happened. They created this virus, but it turns out something was up and they kind of like it would create new life. But something was wrong and they kept getting like less intelligent with each infection.
That's well, some real flowers for Algernon like, shit there, huh?
Yeah, I don't know that they were being portrayed. Like, it came across it because like we have our own biases that they appear dumb. But,
I don't know. The scene where Archer and Reed are fighting over a melon full of bugs was very like... Look how ape-like these things
are. I think that was a choice. I think it would have worked better if they hadn't made them so monkey-like.
They should have, what they should have done was pistols at 10 paces for that.
Yes.
Yeah, or, I mean, if it wasn't, you know, oh, this society created this virus as a way to preserve their identity. If it was just, you know, and again, this would be very reminiscent of other episodes, but if it's just like, oh, no, this is how that... Like, this is the only way they do procreate, period, is by infecting people. Like, they give, like, their bodies give off some kind of spores or something.
Yeah, which, again, at least doesn't seem at odds with the way they were portrayed.
Yeah, this is also The Expanse, where everything's slightly weird anyway.
Yeah.
Or so we're told.
When it's convenient for a story, at least.
When you want to spill coffee in Archer's quarters.
It also would have made more sense if it was, like, something that the bodies themselves gave off. when, because Reed was the first affected and he was the one that was like touching stuff on the planet.
Yeah.
They originally went to check this planet out because
Zindi had been there.
They thought that Zindi had been there. So I guess the question is, were the corpses that they found at the beginning Zindi, who had been transmutated into these monsters? Or because they scanned them and they said, oh, these aren't Zindi, but that's probably just because the DNA had already been changed.
Because they scanned them afterwards and they weren't human.
Yeah. So those probably were Zindi.
Yeah, they've just been done in by the quarantine patrol there.
Yeah, I will say I rag on the teasers for this show an awful lot. This was a good teaser. I felt teased. Watching that man roasted alive.
Yeah, good
like,
God.
Kill him first and then roast him. But Jesus, guys.
Yeah. Nah, that's a waste of a bullet.
How shitty do those guys feel, though, that they killed their comrade and then they get the cure an hour later?
Yeah. Oh, they probably not that bad.
True.
Yeah, fair.
At the time it was somewhat justified. Like, I can see not wanting that shit to, but, you know, all I could think was, man, if we as a race of people had only taken our pandemic a tenth as seriously as these people did, we would have been all right.
Definitely don't take it as seriously as they did.
Well, that's why I said a tenth.
Yeah.
That keeps us far away from
we've been
roasting.
Flame-throwing anti-vaxxers.
I mean, I'm not saying that's a good idea, but I'm not saying it's a good idea. Blah, 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 blah.
Also, we got here. Oh, so we did get to see some Makos do something, and they had different EV suits than the normal, like, two flashlights attached to the head, like Mickey Mouse, that, like, Trip was wearing.
Single
headlamp. I liked that. And then when we see the aliens in their EV suits, theirs were green to show they were aliens.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if it was, like, trying to do, like, a night vision thing, because, you know, like, green is the universal color of night vision, as we've previously discussed.
Yep.
It was like a little
hunt the monsters.
It was a little confusing just because, like, color aside, when it was just silhouettes, the alien EV suit looked a little too much like the Mako one, so it was a little confusing
for
a
second. Well, that's definitely why they made it green then, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost definitely.
It was unclear to me whether Chang got killed or not. The Mako?
I hope not, because that would be a huge waste of Daniel Day Kim.
Yeah, well, like, because he gets, like, when they're on the planet and they get attacked by Archer and company, like, he gets
Womped.
And then I don't think we see him again.
Uh-oh.
But we also never see, because, you know, I was expecting, because I was like, is Chang okay? Did Chang die? And we go to sickbay, and we don't see Phlox, like, tending to Chang. We only see him dealing with the Reed thing. And I'm like, but is he dead? Did we have two deaths this week, or do we just never see Chang again?
I just think he got bonked on the head and then went back to the ship and was fine.
Bonk on the head.
I mean, I guess one question, though, is when the away team came back, how did they decontaminate their EV suits?
Throw them straight into space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think those things got thrown into the fire for sure.
We will be seeing him we'll be seeing him once more. So no, he survived this episode.
All right, good.
I don't know if he survives his next appearance or if they just stop using him out of boredom, like with Cutler.
Well, they seem
and
to
Mayweather.
Rotate which Makos you ever see. Because are there like 10 of them? How many are there?
I don't know.
Some number of Makos. They change out week by week. This week we had Chang and Palmer, evidently.
Palmer? Father?
Thank God for them Georgia peaches. Not like she owns a hairbrush or anything.
No kidding.
Yeah, that was the other thing. I'm like, wait a minute, they've been trying to get a DNA sample from T'Pol and nobody thought to go through her underwear drawer or something.
They do that every week. She's out of underwear.
Yeah. So we tried to, we figured she might have some underwear, but apparently somebody's stolen it all.
But like literally
everyone looks at Reed.
Actually, it's not even anything perverted. It's just Porthos for some reason steals underwear.
Aww.
They, like, just find a whole pile of every crewman's underwear in a Jeffrey's tube, and Porthos is just sleeping on him.
Well, it turns out that, like, Trip and Reed had a slumber party and did a panty raid the night before.
Oh,
so.
God. Then they saran wrapped the toilet.
Yep.
Ugh. Brutal.
Fuck, I had a thought. Oh, yeah. But yeah, like, I remember thinking, oh, he's, you know, Trip's just like, wait a minute, he rushes to a room, and he's going to get a brush, like that time with, not Pulaski. Capaldi. Pulaski, there we go. Or again, like, just anything, her toothbrush, anything, but good thing she took a bite out of a peach and then put it in a bowl with a lid.
Never finished that peach.
The fact that she didn't, because at first I was like, oh, that's gross, why would she put it back in the bowl with the rest of the peaches? They're going to get
Chekhov's peach.
They're going to get all rotten. But no, it was a setup, which, okay, good on you. What I was waiting for was after Phlox analyzes the DNA, he comes back with the surprising discovery that Vulcans, although they might look very human, are actually 98% peach. the Vulcans are made from plant DNA. Did you know that?
Well, you know, she does have a nice bum. And peach emoji for bum or something. I whatever.
Well, we have moved beyond emojis by then.
I don't know.
We're never going to move beyond emojis. They're going to replace words.
I mean, that's fine. We're not going to. Humans will move beyond memes, but the Temerians won't.
No,
we're not going to move beyond memes. What are you, crazy?
I was reading that Gen Zs apparently only like to use emojis to make fun of people who use emojis.
Yeah.
They're all dicks.
Yeah, people make fun of millennials because apparently we use the laughing crying a lot. But I think anyone that makes fun of that doesn't understand what a truly terrible thing it is to be a millennial.
We're always laughing crying.
Because we're laughing to keep from crying.
Like, it'll probably come and go. I imagine they still use emoticons, and then emojis will come back, and then emoticons. And I mean, there's actually... this
Patrick
is true.
Stewart was in the emoji movie, so...
Years ago, I read a thing how, like... And I want to say the 19th century it was, maybe. A writer, I forget who, tried to suggest that periods and exclamation points weren't sufficient for dialogue in prose. Mm. So suggested ending a sentence with, like, a close parentheses to indicate something was said happily.
Okay.
Oh, like that's a smile.
I know there is a punctuation symbol for this should be read sarcastically.
Interesting.
I forget what it looks like, but there is one because it's hard to read sarcasm on a page.
Yes.
It's got to be the most ridiculous piece of, what do you call it? Holy crap.
Typography?
Yeah, that we have. So, like, what do we think it is? Like, that weird little squiggle that lives kind of next to the
tilde?
The tilde? Yeah, maybe it could be the tilde. That one's ridiculous.
I mean, that would be a good one because it's on all the keyboards already, and we don't use it for much else.
Oh my god, it is!
Yeah!
Irony punctuation, placing the tilde adjacent to the punctuation.
Yay!
Oh, there you go.
Wow, good call.
I mean, it just feels right.
I would have made it a lightning bolt.
The close parentheses to be a smile in dialogue clearly never caught on, but again,
that
we did
mean
eventually.
The opposite, the sad would be the other?
I guess it would be, yeah. Oh, but yeah,
I love that.
The precursor to the emoticon.
I'm gonna start doing that.
I don't know, that would get too see confusing. If I don't. When you're actually using parentheses as parenthetically.
Well, yeah, then you'd have to be careful to make sure it's like, wait, was there an opening one? Happy.
You use a square bracket. Don't worry about it.
Switch entirely to M dashes. Do it.
Man, we got off course. How did we even get here?
I don't know.
It's been a long road.
With the happy little guitar. Fucking terrible. Amazing they made that song worse somehow.
Anyway, I don't think, long story short, I don't think this episode was as bad as it gets a rap for, but
it was actually
could have been a lot better.
I kept wondering if it would get distracting watching Archer and Reed and Hoshi jumping around like monkeys. And I thought to myself, you know what? If it were another actor doing it, wouldn't be distracting at all. So good for them. Get it, guys.
And like, honestly, it seemed like they were acting. Like they were believable as those aliens.
It was sad when they saw Urquhart was dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Ames, you commented on it. The weird costumes of the quarantine guys.
Oh my god, those guys.
Like, I was saying, I swear, this is just, they borrowed this from another show. This is really familiar with its weird, like, stones on his chest. I was like, what is this? They borrowed this from another science fiction show with a worse budget. What is happening?
You know, the one thing about this episode that stuck out to me was the scoring felt pretty good and appropriate. Like when they were being chased by the aliens at the end, there was a good tension music.
I remember last episode in Anomaly feeling distracted by some of the action music. Just it was so much percussion, which seemed new. And I was like, what? There's just everyone's going drum happy right now. Okay.
Drum happy. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I kind of like, by the end of both of them, I was barely like able to pay attention. So I did not notice in either episode.
Well, then they didn't do their job because they should be making you feel the tension of a scene.
Maybe, yeah.
Or at least keeping you at least partly awake.
I mean, I was awake, but I was just like as little focused on it as possible while still paying attention, you know? Ugh.
Oh, so when this came out, this was the first episode to have Star Trek in the title card. But now that all other episodes are like on streaming or whatever, they've done it retroactively. But when it was when it came out live, this was the first one to be like, marketing team, put Star Trek on the fucking title card.
So they didn't even start it with the start of the season. Yeah. It was a couple episodes in.
Which is kind of bizarre. Sons
of bitches.
They're like, well, we've done a war crime. Time to mark this as Star Trek.
We're now officially Star Trek. We understand our war crimes.
And we can live with that.
Hmm. Cool.
You know who else can live with war crimes?
other than Ben Sisko?
Other than Ben Sisko.
Garrick. Captain Janeway.
Close.
Gul Dukat.
Getting there.
Odo.
So warm.
It's not Odo?
Not quite. It's not
Odo. Next week is Odo.
Yes.
Shit.
Did you prepare for the wrong person?
No, I didn't prepare at all. What are you, fucking daft? When have I ever? It's O'Brien.
Yes!
Yay,
it's O'Brien. The chief!
The chief.
The chief. Who wants to start on the chief?
I can go.
All right.
Good moments from O'Brien.
So here's the thing about O'Brien, is he's just a solid gold mate, as he would say, probably. I don't know if that's a Irish thing, but it's certainly a British thing, and you know, Irish and British, basically the same. Am I right, guys? Oh God, hate mail coming in already.
Wait, what did you say?
I said the Irish and the British are basically the same.
Whoa, no.
I mean the Northern Irish.
Hey, anywho, yeah. But here's the thing about O'Brien: when he's like, I was struggling to find like standout good moments for him because he's just always so good, like. He's just solid. Mm-hmm. So I had to really struggle to find some really great moments. I guess the first one that I came up with, I think, is a legitimately really great moment for him. And that is when he overcame his racism to an extent and went to talk down Captain Maxwell.
Interesting.
From starting a war with the Cardassians. Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of really great moments in that episode.
This being the wounded?
The wounded.
Nice.
The scene that he has in 10 Forward with the Cardassian, where he kind of explains why he doesn't like Cardassians. But I think overall, the top moment for me from that was when he goes and he and Maxwell sing the song, and it's touching, and it's all good. So yeah, that's a moment I liked. This one might be a little controversial because I put it on Bashir's top list last week. The time when Bashir tried to help the Jem'Hadar off their Ketracel White addiction. But I'm going to say that saving Bashir, stopping Bashir from doing that is a positive moment for O'Brien.
Is a positive moment? Fucking how?
Because...
That's at the top of my bad moments.
Really? I look at it as kind of saving Bashir from himself. Just because I don't think that... Bashir was going to actually solve the problem. Like we that's basically acknowledged.
Yeah.
And the Jem'Hadar were so close to just murdering them both. And O'Brien knew this because O'Brien is a soldier and Bashir is a doctor, and Bashir had to do what he had to do, which is do everything he could to save the Jem'Hadar because of the Hippocratic Oath, the titular Hippocratic Oath.
Nope, you said the title.
But by the same token, O'Brien had to do what he had to do and protect his superior officer from the murderous hordes that were going to kill them both. And I give O'Brien credit for doing that, which I think was a hard choice.
We'll revisit this in a couple minutes then.
Fair. And then I think it goes without saying that the very best of O'Brien is...
Tosk?
What?
Tosk.
Did I say Tosk?
No, I'm
expecting Tosk.
I'm expecting Tosk.
Give us Tosk.
he is helping Tosk escape.
Yay! Good job, Jake.
Is that really what we're going to say, or were you peer pressure?
Yeah, of course.
good.
One of us, we are Tosk.
I have a couple honorable mentions, but I'll wait to see if anybody else says them.
All right, Ames, you go next.
No.
Okay, Caitlin, you go next.
Okay.
I go last because I got the long list. That's how it works. Right.
Let's see. Best O'Brien moments. When he gave Bilby the heads up to try to get him away.
Aww.
Even because it was obviously really hard for him and it obviously broke Bilby's heart, but he was trying to do the right thing while sort of doing the wrong thing, but it was sort of the right thing. So I like that. I thought, speaking of like overcoming prejudices, there's that episode of Deep Space Nine when the Cardassian boy is on the station and he was being raised by Bajorans. He was one of the like war orphans.
Yeah, Rugal.
Rugal. And I feel like O'Brien made a lot of personal growth there with that character.
Yeah, that was very cute. He was like, oh, you hate Cardassians? I also hate Cardassians.
And he's like, what? No. I just feel like he, again, it wasn't like a big series changing thing, but I felt like it was a big O'Brien changing thing. And that was cool. And obviously number one is Tosk.
Yay.
I also have an honorable mention / joke, but I'll hold on to it until later.
All right. So I think like with Jake, I kind of had an issue. It was kind of hard to find good specific moments, but I've got one here that has a couple of moments. I think Ames, you can pick your favorite screenshot for it.
Nice.
Always supports his idiot friend.
Which that one? Is,
what?
No, Julian?
That is very vague. What the fuck are you talking about?
So I'm going to give you options of supporting his idiot friend, Julian. Now, again, we all agree that it was a bad move, but Miles agreed to tag along during the insanely dangerous mission to invade Luther Sloan's mind.
That is not going on my good list, no matter what.
He
give me a better example.
It was an incredibly stupid thing to do, but he tagged along with Julian when he fucking horned in on Jadzia's mission there with the Worf Get Her Into Stovacor mission.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Again, Julian shouldn't have done it. It was dumb. But Miles like, oh, you fucking idiot. Someone's going to be there to keep you from getting killed. What else? There's about there's just moments where Julian, again, like he again, I did not put the blowing up the thing moment on either of my lists because it's just such a mess.
Blowing up what thing?
The lab Julian was using for the Kestrel light cure. Like, again, I think his reasoning wasn't entirely right, but he was trying to help his idiot friend. He's a good friend to his idiot friend, Julian. And then my other two we've already heard, trying to save Bilby and Tosk.
Nice, nice, nice. I think I've got to give you guys better rules for this pick your favorite moments list to be a moment and not the whole series. Well,
I gave you a couple of options for the subheading. I just wasn't sure which one to use specifically, so I figured I'd choose a couple.
Yikes. Okay, so I have a bunch of spares. Obviously, Tosk was at the top of my list, but I have some extras to give you guys from my near the top of the list. The first I'm going to give is the beautiful scene with the dying Munez in the ship.
Oh,
I love that PK. Scene where he stays with him as he's dying, even though Worf is like, this is without honor, rah, rah, rah. And he's like, fuck you, Worf. This is important, and he's my friend. And I loved that an awful lot. Here's a great, very specific moment, as I am wont to do, in that in Armageddon Game, when he's dying of whatever that horrible disease thing was from the bio-warfare episode, Take No Archer, that he insists he die on his feet.
Mm.
And
oh,
that is
the
badass.
Shit, it's those, I just watched this recently, and they, like, have to kill them because they don't want anyone who knows about the machines, so they're, like, Reapers or, I just watched this, guys.
And Keiko thought something was up because he had coffee late in the day, which he never does, but it turns out he does.
Never has coffee in the afternoon.
Just hooked up to an IV of coffee like Janeway at all times.
Someone actually recently made a meme of that using that scene from Airplane. Oh, he never has a second cup of coffee at home. It's like, shit, I don't think we made that reference at the time, and we should have.
That's a good one. Damn. And last moment, I'm going to go all the way back to our first meeting of O'Brien in Encounter at Farpoint.
Oh.
When he was the helmsman briefly.
Yeah, wearing
and
red.
And I know Picard gives Riker all the credit for doing the first saucer separation of the show, but really it was just Riker telling O'Brien to do it, and O'Brien did it. Go, O'Brien.
Go, Brian.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I had a couple of honorable mentions. One of which is taking in Chester.
Oh, yeah. Chester.
Giving Chester a new home.
Chester.
Taking care of the kitty.
Even though Keiko told him not to.
Yes.
Whatever. She doesn't even live there half the time anymore.
Poor Keiko, man.
Poor Keiko. Oh,
poor Keiko. She's married to the most perfect man in the whole fucking Starfleet.
Well, we have more moments coming up. He's not that perfect.
Yeah.
He's perfect.
Yeah, I had another honorable mention that I forgot to mention. Now I didn't write it down, so shit. I just thought of it, but then I forgot it again.
Not just beaming everyone into space in madness like in Chief O'Brien at work?
I would say honorable mention because he manages not... He neither fucks that hot Cardassian who wants his shit, the engineer, and he doesn't fuck Kira. I'm just saying, he should get points. He should get points for not being a bad man.
But he wanted to, and that makes him a bad man.
Yeah, but he didn't.
He also didn't fuck that Bajoran terrorist that was kind of flirting.
Oh, yeah, he was totally into her, too. Yep. No matter what you say about him, he is loyal to Keiko.
Speaking of loyal to Keiko, aside from Julian, I will say, actually, that creating boundaries with child Keiko... in Rascals is good on him because she's like, Miles, I'm a child now. And he's like, we are no longer having sex. And she's like, oh, no, it's like, you're a child. Stop it.
I mean, that's not like not being a pedophile is, I mean, sure.
Have you been on the internet? That like he deserves a medal. God. Way too many people are way too into children.
That's the farf.
Shall we move to the bottom?
How has he fucked up?
Amply.
Yeah, he's got a few. Here's three that occurred to me. Speaking of people not being the ages they're supposed to be, giving up on old Molly.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Basically throwing in the towel and saying, well, let's just return her from when she came. And good thing old Molly was smart enough to save herself, I guess, and send young Molly out of the
good thing young anomaly. Molly was randomly there to send back.
True. But yeah, just kind of giving up on the child and not it worked out for the best, but yeah, not a great look. Now, y'all have been mentioning all the great things he did for Bilby. I'm going to say entrapping Bilby and getting him killed in the first place.
Wasn't great. No, that's fair.
True.
Because, you know, Bilby, as much as he was a criminal, and he was, seemed like a pretty stand-up guy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And it was a good friend for Miles, and looked out for Miles, and helped out Miles. And what did Miles do in return? He entrapped him and set him up with this disruptor sales scheme.
Yeah. Also, he could steal his cat.
Also, he could steal his cat. And then maybe bang his wife. No, Miles would never do that.
Also, his wife can get killed in a different episode. He did
send. Oh, that was the other one I was going to mention, is sending money to Bilby's widow.
Mm. Oh, that is a good point.
But that was the other one I will mention. And then I guess also solving her murder.
Yeah.
Or helping to solve her murder. But anyway, okay, so yeah, getting Bilby killed. And then, so this one's going to be a little controversial, I think, because it's not really Miles doing it. Or maybe not really. Miles
oh, is it? Is it not, a, not, a not, replicant not, of Miles?
No, not even that.
Damn it!
It's not some. I'll say this: it's not something that he probably did of his own agency, but murdering Ichar.
Ooh.
Now the thing is, and I was debating this myself. Like, okay, is that something that he did it of his own agency, or was that just part of the memory implant, and he had no choice? Like, it's just part of that memory implant. But either way, it wasn't great.
Either way, you can definitely say it was a bad moment for Miles.
It was a low point for Miles.
It was a hard time.
Ah.
Good one. That's the name of the episode.
It is. You got a drink. That was free from Jake. Does Caitlin have some?
Man, not really. I think the... Yeah, I mean, arguably when he... I've been brought back around because I don't think I said this before, but when he destroyed the meth lab, I mean, Ketracel White Lab, that Bashir was working on, I agree that he did it to save Julian, but it also kind of sucks because if Julian could have cracked it, it would have had huge waves through the Dominion and might have ended the war more quickly.
I love that it's on both lists. That'll be great. That'll be a good time.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of, like, I don't know, I guess Smiley tricked or kidnapped Sisko and made him go to the Mirror Universe. I don't know if that really counts.
Sure, why not?
And it wasn't even that bad, though, because then he got to see Jennifer and stuff.
No, it was terrible. You had to watch Jennifer die.
Again.
It's fine. What else did he do? I don't really know. I'm really struggling. I mean, he's not a good guy. He's got a lot of he's not a bad guy. He's got a lot of racism.
He's complicated.
He's complicated. He's human. He's a person, you know? It's, I don't
know,
man. He might
be our most person-y character because, you know, you get a lot of characters who are like the stand-up people who have no faults. And they're just like, oh, here's just a normal guy with lots of faults. Have you seen him try to play racquetball?
And the thing is, like, I could just cop out and, like, agree with what, you know, the ones that have come before. But, like, I sort of don't, like, I don't think it was the best thing he ever did, like, letting Molly go. But Molly was so obviously miserable.
But sending, like, her into the woods on her own.
Where she had easily survived for, like, a decade and a half?
At least give her a tent.
She's a human being.
Yeah, humans love tents.
She's like your tents. Daughter. I find it unfrickin' forgivable.
Well, since Chris sort of just said he was a good friend, I'm just gonna say that he's a racist. There you go.
That's it. I gave concrete
too
examples.
Too many episodes.
Yeah, I don't know. All the time, always.
Well, I'm gonna jump on this and sort of not quite disagree with Jake, but kind of disagree with Jake.
Uh oh.
Because there's the scene where he's with the Cardassian and the wounded. And he's like, I don't hate you. I hate what you made me into. And it's just like, I mean, Miles, let's be honest. Starfleet made you into that. Because.
Oh, that's interesting.
My thought with that always is, and this, I think, propaganda. It shows that there were cracks starting to form in the Federation. Because one of the more famous moments from Balance of Terror is Kirk looking at Lieutenant Shitface being like, keep your bigotry in your quarters. Mm-hmm. No one was saying that to O'Brien, clearly. In fact, if any, they seem to be egging it on.
They probably did.
Yeah. And we see it a lot. And we see that a lot during the Dominion War, too, is like no one seems to be trying to keep them from hating on the Starfleet in general, from hating on the Jem'Hadar, who, again, we know are slaves to a drug.
Yeah. Well,
to be fair, Kirk was telling that guy to leave his racism in his quarters in reference to that guy being shitty towards Spock.
Yeah, I it's not a one-to-one, but still, I just think that, like, clearly Starfleet will happily put its morals aside when it's convenient.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, we so quickly treated the Mark Leonard Romulan as a person more quickly than we treat any of the Dominion folks as people.
Yeah, yeah, and again, like
friend.
Yeah, and again, like, yeah, it's fair, I think, to hate the Founders, because they're awful. But, like, the Jem'Hadar are literally slaves, and even the Vorta are just kind of, like, genetically engineered to be subservient to them.
Mm. And we've met a couple of them who are like, hey, this isn't who we really are. Like, we meet Garanagar in Hippocratic Oath, who's like, yeah. I want you to help us. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so, like, I think, you know, his misplaced Cardassian racism isn't great. And I would use that moment from The Wounded as kind of my example.
That's a good example. And I like your rationality. That's pretty good.
Interestingly, also from The Wounded, which I didn't realize until I was looking at, what episode was this scene in? Not getting to know his wife before he married her? Because they sit down to that dinner.
What do they say in The Wounded?
When they sit down to dinner, and it's like, oh, it's my favorite meal. And he's shocked by the food. And it's like,
oh, wow.
Did you not spend any
Wounded?
Yeah, I didn't know either. I was shocked when I, but yeah, it's from The Wounded. That's in that episode, which, by the way, is the first episode after Data's day. So they got married in the previous episode. And in the very next episode, he's like, wait, you eat what now? And it's like, how did you not know?
And it's a replicator. Replicate whatever you want.
Data's day was also Keiko's first episode on the show. So for all we know, they just met a week earlier.
Maybe they must just both know exactly what the other one wants in bed. Because they were just like, I just want to fuck you for the rest of forever. We'll figure each other out later.
Maybe Miles O'Brien was a mail order bride.
I was going to say, maybe it was an arranged marriage.
By Data. Data introduced
him.
Yeah.
And Data has terrible taste.
Data's a matchmaker. He did math and determined that they would be compatible.
I mean, they stay together through thick and thin. But yeah, not getting to know his wife before marrying her. Like, come on, dude. And then, I had heart. Because again, he's sort of got these like human flaws, but there's not a ton of like moments that jump to mind. And also Memory Alpha does a really bad job of like listing the shitty idiot moments, unless they were major story moments. So I'm just gonna go with like coming way too close to fucking Kira that time. And not maybe going to Keiko being like, look, I know you want to spend more time together because of reasons, but it's not working and here's why. Just being an adult about it.
Stop making me rub her feet.
Yeah.
They snap you do it. Like Trip's feet.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm actually really glad there are some of these that are going to be on both lists, because that makes them very complex episodes, which I'm a fan of.
Yeah.
Before I tell you my list, I'm going to just say a little extra thing about the Hippocratic Oath thing, because Jake putting it on his good list is interesting to me. And that's that I don't think at the beginning of the episode, for sure, O'Brien was doing anything to save Julian. He was trying to destroy the whole process out of sheer racism.
Oh, yeah. That's
later,
sure.
It's to save Julian. But at the beginning, he's like, no, Julian, we can't do this because they're the enemy and I hate what their faces look like.
Yeah, and it's like, and the thing is, I think it is plain that, you know, in the episode, it even becomes clear that just that one guy happened to have a natural immunity and Julian wasn't going to figure it out. But part of O'Brien's reasoning also was like, it'll just make them more of a menace if they're not slaves to the drug. And it's like, what?
Well, that's the thing. Even an admiral from the future can't tell you what tomorrow will bring.
But it's like, what a weird thing to think. It's like, oh man, if we break away the one hold the Dominion has over them, clearly they'll just work for the Dominion happily. And it's like,
well,
what? Maybe some of them? But
they might, but a group of individuals not just acting out of desperation might be able to be more logical and more thought out and more intentional.
Yeah, but that's why I didn't put it on either list, because it's all just such a, it's a crazy mess. It's a good episode.
But it's such a good episode because of that crazy mess.
Yeah.
Because it makes you think of these things, which I'm a huge, huge fan of. Things I'm not a huge fan of that O'Brien does. Now, I'm not going to be the bitch that just says marrying Keiko, because that's mean. I'm going to be the bitch that says dragging Data in to be the one that goes between when they're trying to figure out, oh, we should get married. Oh, we shouldn't get married. Oh, the wedding's on. Oh, the wedding's off. Data, you be the one that constantly communicates this between us. Handle it yourselves. Be adults. Jerks. God, I don't like that about that episode. And I blame O'Brien. And I blame Keiko. When we get to our Keiko coverage, I'll probably blame her for that, too.
TNG did not write their relationship well.
Mm. Speaking of, neither did DS9 on occasion, and the one I'm going to cite for this one is in Fascination. They weren't even being affected by Luoxana's, not Benzie syndrome. Oh, it's gone. Whatever her horniness disease.
Yeah, her horniness flu.
Xanthi fever. They weren't being affected, and yet Miles still storms in and accuses Keiko of cheating on him. And they spend the whole episode fighting. And God, do the writers not seem to like want these two people to like each other?
Yeah, it's weird.
And it's
not
so
as bad
weird.
As again with not as bad as TNG, where they were just a sitcom couple. But
ah, God, they're so toxic, though. Like, why should I like them together? I have no fucking reason.
So I have a dishonorable mention that kind of is another evidence of that.
Do it, because I'll let you tell me more bad Keiko moments.
Well, it's not a bad Keiko moment. It's a really bad Miles moment.
Bad Miles, and bad.
Really, so when he dragged Keiko to Deep Space Nine to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
And then
she was a botanist before.
Yeah, and then when she was bummed out that, like, oh, my job is, I can't do my job here. He was like, oh, well, you know, maybe we'll set up a little garden for you to play in.
And patronizing as hell.
Yeah, basically patronized her. And then the show kind of disregarded it entirely. It's just like, oh, no, she's just going to be a teacher now. And she'll be happy with that.
Yeah, have a woman's line of work. You do this now, lady. Last one I'm going to mention as like a little thing is another hard time moment, because there's a bunch of those from that are interesting to bring up. And that's that when he's in one of his PTSD laden rages, he beats the hell out of Quark, is just really mean.
Wow, I forgot about that.
Yeah, he almost beats the hell out of Molly.
He did also. Yeah, you're right. Really thought about slugging Molly. And it's like, dude, you are. Please go to more therapy, all the therapy.
I wanted to be very clear that the racist moment in 10 Forward in the Wounded is not on my top list. The moment in from the Wounded on my top list is talking down
Maxwell.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
I like that. Yeah, it's another episode that kind of like takes you for a racism ride, and who has the most. Maxwell, evidently.
Oh, God, so much.
But the point remains, Maxwell was fucking right.
Yeah, and that's the problem. TNG and DS9, I don't think they meant to do this with TNG, but they had all these individual episodes that just added up to the Federation completely biffed it in their dealings with the Cardassian government. And DS9, so much of it is dealing with the fallout of how much they fucked up with the Cardassians, which was so much.
Yeah.
Well, I got nothing. I was going to try to think of a clever segue, but I got to fuck it. We're done. We're done this week. Thank you again for joining us on A Stardust Year Herby. As always, follow us on Facebook and SoundCloud and whatever else. Talk about O'Brien with us on our Facebook or on our Tumblr, where this and other blog posts live. Next week, it's more fucking Expanse shenanigans in... I have no idea how to pronounce this. Rajin. It's R-A-J-I-I-N. We'll find out.
We'll hear it next week.
Yeah, so Rajin. There's no apostrophe. Rahim. I don't know. Rahim. And Impulse. And next week, everyone's favorite fascist, Constable Odo.
Yay! Constable Odo. Oh, that'll be a fun discussion.
Everything he does is bad, especially the good things.
Especially the good things. That's great. That's excellent.
So join us then. Until then, this has been Chris.
This has been Ames.
This has been Caitlin.
And this is always Jake.
Jesus.